you know, what are the things, what are the medications that people take? So I'm doing this last night and I'm looking for, you know, what's a good slide. And so I, you know, Google images and, you know, pills, and I get this and I think, wow, pills for joy, peace, right? Calm and bliss. And I thought, well, I know what that drug is, right? I mean, I'm going to talk to these people. I know exactly what that drug is. The next piece I want to show you, because I just sort of got on this riff about drugs and you know, how we use drugs and what drugs are good for, I want to show you. But I want to urge you to watch all the way through to the end, especially the women in the room, because it's not nearly as sexist as it looks like at the beginning, okay? But this is just, you know, I just couldn't resist.
Do you get depressed, tired, stressed? Millions of Americans go through life ill at ease, but you don't have to be one of them. Introducing blowjobs. Blowjobs are FDA approved to relieve stress, anxiety, and symptoms of depression. There are no regular pills. You just have one whenever you need it, and blowjobs work quickly to calm you down so you can get on with your day.
Is this not true?
I used to be upset all the time, and I didn't think there was any other way. Then my doctor prescribed blowjobs. It works great. I still have my occasional ups and downs, but, you know, keeps me from snapping.
I used to avoid parties, made me miss all the important things in life. But now I get blowjobs before I leave the house, and anywhere I go, I'm calm and confident. Thanks, blowjobs.
Learn more about blowjobs. Blowjobs are not for everyone. Side effects include hepatitis B, herpes, gonorrhea, and syphilis. May cause drowsiness. Do not drive while getting blowjobs. If blowjob causes chafing or scarring, discontinue blowjob immediately. Ask your doctor about blowjobs today.
Right, so, you know, advertising, what medications people take. Now, I have not ever had anybody answer my question about what medications do you take by saying, I get blowjobs. I did, however, just this last year, in dealing with a client who was the wife of a guy. So the guy gets charged with, the two of them are riding home after a party, and they get into a fight, and they get out of the truck to have the fight on somebody's lawn, who calls the police. And before the police get there, they get back in the car and drive off. And three guesses what happens. He gets charged with the... What's that?
He gets a blowjob.
He gets a blowjob. Yes, ultimately, because he gets charged with domestic violence, she gets charged with DUI, and they're both headed to court at the same time. A lawyer who's representing him on the domestic violence refers me the DUI. As between the two of them, he is the much, much more difficult to manage client, right? She's fine. We're going to get her case dealt. And she is now having to help us, the two lawyers, get her husband to deal his DV case so that the whole thing can be wrapped up in a nice, pretty package. And as we're sitting in the hallway at one point, after everybody having been in a room together working on the husband to get him to take the deal, as God is my witness, she looks up at me and says, oh yeah, I definitely see a blowjob in my future. So I'm thinking about this. The stuff that's in people's heads and in their hearts is what matters to us as their lawyers. It's what needs to matter to us as their lawyers. And if we can communicate that to them, then we are in a much, much better position to be saying to them, I am the one who ought to be doing your case, right? I am the one to whom you should be paying this money, okay?
Or giving a blowjob.
The confidence, okay, is what clients are looking for, one way or the other, right? It often takes the form of, well, I want somebody who's going to win my case. Does that then translate into I want you to tell me that you're going to win my case? I tell you no. Because they also understand that that's probably a lie. At some level, they probably understand that that's a lie. What you can do is, there's a whole lot of stuff that you can do to project that confidence. So I first want to give you a picture of, oh, damn it, of what I think that looks like. Oh, man, it went away. All right, too bad. It'll take me too long to find it.
Right-click?
No. I don't even know how to do that, Jerry. No, I do know how to right-click, but that's not gonna find it. I'll have to go dig around and find the clip.
Check that sidebar on the left. You can scroll down it, and there might be the page open.
No, it's see, the problem is it's not in a it's not in the PowerPoint. I had to. Oh, you want to read my email? Right, everyone. Don't do that. I shouldn't do that. It's probably like major confidentiality problems. Well, there's the, you know, there's all sorts of good stuff here, right? Okay. Really, I know what I'm doing. We'll just go on to, now I got to go back to the next. Yeah, thank you very much. All right. There. How's that? That's a pretty good picture for confidence. That's what they're looking for, right? Someone that is willing to, you know, face down the enemy, fearlessly face down the enemy. Now, the enemy may take very different forms for people, right? You know, really what I want to do is say to you that there are a number of ways for you to say things that communicate that people, right? You don't want to be saying, I guarantee you I'm going to win your case. But do you or do you not believe this? As a lawyer, right? I can't guarantee you that I'm going to win, but I guarantee you that if there's a way to win, I will find it. I will find it. I know that. I absolutely believe that. I absolutely believe that the only way to approach a case is to look for every possible way to win. I know that, and I know that when I say that to the client in the first meeting, that there is a better than 95% chance that the case is going to deal, right? That they are going to plead to something. That we're not going to be in trial. That I'm probably not even going to be preparing for trial. It doesn't matter. They don't get that. They don't understand that. And I submit to you that the very first time to be talking to them about that is not in that first meeting. And I can't tell you the number of lawyers that come to see me, having told me that they've been shopping, that they're talking to other lawyers, and having heard from the other lawyers about how shitty their case is. Because I know what those lawyers are doing. They're trying to manage those expectations, right? The very first thing they hear is unreasonable expectation, and it's my job as a lawyer to manage it. Yes, it is your job as a lawyer to manage it, but not now. And you can't manage it. You can't manage it unless you first have the confidence and the trust of the client. And the only way you're going to have the trust and confidence of the client is if you are willing to listen and if you are willing to talk to them about how it is that you are going to take it on for them. They're not looking for somebody who's going to take it on part way. They're looking for somebody who's going to take it on all the way. Now, one of the things, of course, that's a problem for us as lawyers is some of us are way too good at doing that, right? We take on way too much for our clients, right? And we stay up at night, and we lose sleep, and we drive our wives and our girlfriends and our husbands, right, our partners, our children, our animals crazy because we take on so much from our clients. All right, that's probably a different lecture and probably needs to come from a psychologist. But the bottom line is that that is who you need to be when you're first talking to people about, am I going to be the one to do your case? Am I the one to whom you should pay this money? Or is it going to be somebody else? Okay. Now, if you, there certainly are these cases. And there are clients, by the way, who come in saying, oh my God, I don't want to take the case to trial. The last thing I can ever do is take the case to trial. The publicity is going to kill me. It's going to be too expensive. It's, you know, my family could never deal with that. okay, I think you need to be saying to those people, there's, you know, I defend cases on two tracks at the same time. We got to be looking for every way that we possibly can to win it, which means never getting to a sentencing hearing. And we have to be talking about what are we going to do if we do get to a sentencing hearing, right? Because there are these clients that you've got to be the one to get them into treatment. You've got to be the one to get them to a psychologist. You've got to be the one to get them inpatient. You've got to be the one to get them on an antidepressant, anti-bipolar medication. And you have to be saying to them, that's part of my job as a lawyer. Again, I think when people hear about it in terms of what you are willing to take on to help them, to help minimize the problem, you're much further down the road of being able to land them as a client and to be able to land that fee. They want somebody that knows the law. You need to look for ways to be able to give them an answer about the law. They want somebody that knows the players. You want to be looking for ways not to say, you know, I play golf with the judge, right? Because that's what they think. There are plenty of people that think that that's, you know, that's what helps win, right? How many of you have judges that you in fact play golf with, drink with, are really good friends with, and who will fuck your client every time that you get in front of them, right? How many of those judges are ex-public defenders? Right, no, we're not gonna go there. It's just a weird thing. I don't get that. It bothers me to this day every time I go into certain courts. But people need to know that you know the players, right? So being able to talk about that, being able to express confidence about, you know, and in a day and age when you're often dealing with a deputy district attorney who is, 23 years old, 26, you know, that can be hard. It's not necessarily going to be somebody that I know, but here's what I know about that office. Here's what I know about who that person is likely to be. I can talk to a client about that. I suppose I should probably get to some of this stuff in my last 5 minutes about, you know, the ethics. That's not who we want to be, right? And we have to understand that that's who we are seen as, and at some level, but there are better ways of explaining that, right? Look, be upfront, be honest. I listen to lawyers all the time try and explain to people, well, you know, it's not that expensive, and I know that there are lawyers out there that are doing the whole, you know, he told you it's going to be $10,000, I'll do it for $5. No, you can find somebody else that'll do it for $2,500. Look, it's expensive. If you want to do this well, it's expensive, okay? Don't be afraid of that word. There are lots of lawyers that do this kind of work well, but only a handful that do it well. These are just lines that I want to give you that, you know, because I've learned that good lawyering is all about theft, right? So you want to steal these things. Some things about flat fees. Make sure that the money is starting in the trust account regardless of what you do. You are putting into writing, doing written fee agreements, and remember who it is that you're writing for. This is the most important thing that I can tell you about this. You are not writing your fee agreement primarily for the client. You are not writing your fee agreement at all, I will tell you, ever, for a court or a jury in the lawsuit over that fee, okay? You're just not. Because if you've gotten there, you are so lost and so done that you might not as well start. You're writing it for whoever the grievance committee is, the ethics, the Supreme Court, that's who you're writing it for. Because that's the only place that this is ever going to go that it matters to you if you have any brains. You know, I will say to you from experience, never ever sue a client ever, period, or send them to collection, period. It's not worth it. Don't do it. Am I being clear enough? Okay? It's just not. So you're doing this because ethically you're required to, because you're writing it for that ethics body in case you get into ethical trouble, but the way you're going to solve any ethical problem with a fee that you have with a client is what? giving them the money back. It is the first and most important rule. There are certain lawyers, some of whom are sitting in this very room, who have been known to teach, take all of the money and give none of it back, right? And that was one of the things that Posner taught me. It's also, fortunately, I saw him do the opposite, right? And you look up at somebody and you say, it is not worth it. Here's the money back. Here's some of the money back. That's a whole lot easier to do if you're doing what the ethics rules tell us to, which is to put it into a trust account, take it out as you reach mileposts in the case. One of those mileposts, you know, here's a good example. But you can do whatever the hell you want. The ethics rules are flexible. You can make up whatever mileposts you want. You can look at a case and say, you know, it's at a stage where it's, you know, the person's already been through a bunch of lawyers. I'm getting in to do a very specific thing. Manage this prosecutor. I'm going to try and get this deal. I can heavily weight the fee at the front end. I can say 50% of it is when I start and when I start negotiating with the prosecutor, right? It's not every case. You can manage these things so that you can make more sense of it and manage your life and your money better. That's it. That's all I got.